So whether we're talking about the Erie Canal, the Conestoga Wagon, or the interstate system, the multi-billion dollar interstate system that is still a work in progress, the story of America is the story of transportation. And there's no better reporter of America's transportation narrative than Matt Dellinger. He's the author of the new book, Interstate 69, The Unfinished History of the Last Great American Highway. He joins us here in the studio. Matt, welcome back.
Hi, John. Thanks very much.
Congratulations on completing this epic.
Thank you very much.
You did better than the actual interstate system as far as I-69 is concerned.
Well, that's I put the word unfinished in the title as a nod to that.
Convince me of why the story of this particular interstate and any road could possibly deliver what you suggest is the overall narrative of what's wrong, really, with American transportation policy, which some say is non-existent.
Well, the story of I-69 is special in basically three ways: the genesis of it, the timing of it, and the reaction to it. The genesis was very strange. It was not the work of the U.S. Department of Transportation. This was not an idea that came out of Washington. It came from a breakfast table in Indiana, and it was a very ad hoc effort, basically. They were trying to build a road through Indiana. All of the studies said that it wasn't worth building. And an economist had a brainstorm and said, well, why don't you make it a multi-state corridor? So it went from 150 miles to 1,400 miles. And a guy drove in his car and basically formed a coalition, an ad hoc coalition that got very lucky. And the timing is that this all happened in the early 90s, right when the federal government was finally stepping away from the interstate system. It passed a bill that said, it was called the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act, and the intermodal being the key word, that we're done building the interstates and it's time to start fleshing out, giving states more power.
But it was also at a moment when the U.S. was stepping up towards international cooperation in terms of the Western Hemisphere.
Exactly, yes. And I mean, NAFTA had just been signed in 1992 when this group got together in Memphis, and, you know, they embraced NAFTA because it kind of gave a reason for being for I-69, because it would connect Canada and Mexico. It really wasn't about that, though. I mean, this was that was essentially a convenient excuse to take to Washington to make this a project of national significance. But really, this was a series of local development schemes.
And the story here, and I want to get into some of the individual stories here, the development here was sort of ad hoc, but it's ended up spending more than $2 billion in just studies, right?
The studies are very expensive, yes, and each state had to do its own piece.
So billions of dollars have already been spent, and the politics of this has been kind of like on sort of robot. It goes by itself. It doesn't require a whole lot of energy. To get the same amount of spending for, say, mass transit or some of the other sort of future-looking ideas, you'd have a much more difficult time.
It's true. I mean, the process was one of the very interesting things that I wanted to write about in the book, and it's because even if this is the last great American highway, we're going to see coalitions springing up around transit projects, around high-speed rail projects, and they're going to encounter the same problems that I-69 did that will slow it down. The environmental laws, the studies you have to do, all of the eminent domain lawsuits you have to avoid, and the funding you have to put together. These are seemingly insurmountable odds. So when we talk about high-speed rail, you have to budget in 10 years just for studies and lawsuits.
What was the funniest, most bizarre story of Americana that you discovered along this non-existent Interstate 69?
There were a couple funny ones. You know, the thing that I find, one of the things I found most amazing, and I don't know if it's funny, but there's a man in Tennessee near Union City. He's a wealthy man who's decided to use his millions to basically build a giant, what he's calling the Discovery Park of America. And he wanted to avoid paying taxes, inheritance taxes, to his kids. And he talked to his lawyers, and they said, you know, build something big for the public. And so he's building this giant, it's everything but the kitchen sink. It's a historical museum. It's an art museum. It's a park. And it's going to have a giant glass floored observation deck that will look over the newly built I-69.
And aside from all of the other themes of the park, it's dedicated to the notion that if you build it, the interstate will come.
That is if you build the interstate and this, then the town will survive. So he wanted to make good on the promise of I-69 with this giant Discovery Park of America.
The communities that this interstate would serve are the very communities that actually have suffered from interstates being built elsewhere.
Exactly.
Name some of the places.
Well, the Mississippi Delta is a very good example, and the Rio Grande Valley, the bottom of Texas. And as you said, the story of transportation and the story of America go hand in hand. And first it was the canals, then the railroads, and then the interstates that basically shifted the economy around. It became the circulation system of the economy. So the fact that this is a post-interstate, these towns are all the more desperate for this highway because they've seen growth along the existing interstates.
But they're addicted to something which no longer gets you high, I think is what you would say in this sort of 21st century infrastructure. What these communities need is not Interstate 69.
Well, that's arguable, obviously. There are the opponents point out that most of the proponents of I-69 are in their 60s, 70s, or 80s. I mean, this is a bit of a dinosaur of an idea. At the same time, I don't know that places like Haynesville, Arkansas will ever be a high-speed rail stop. For many of these towns, it is I-69 or death.
The tragedy, I think, of this book, Interstate 69, that Matt Dillinger has written and we're talking about here on The Takeaway, is that the huge success of the interstate system isn't necessarily a model for equivalent huge success in light rail or other transportation systems that are maybe more important for this century.
It's not an example in what?
It's not a model in the sense that what we did well on interstates, we can't necessarily duplicate to create a light rail system that's as effective as...
I think what we did wrong with the interstate system was that we just did the interstate system. I mean, going whole hog in any direction is probably a bad idea.
And this summer, would you say that your summer is all about thinking about Interstate 69?
Yes, it is. My six words are, finally finish that Interstate 69 book.
And are they all going to invite you down there to these communities?
I'm doing a tour the next 3 weeks all along the route. I can't wait.
And you begin in?
I start in Evansville, Indiana, and head down to Texas through the Delta, Mississippi, Memphis, Houston.
Well, it is a story of transportation. It is a story of a work in progress. The new book is Interstate 69, The Unfinished History of the Last Great American Highway. Matt Dillinger is our guest. He wrote the book. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
Good luck to you. If you have an emblem for the end of the summer, 877-8-MY-TAKE, post a comment at thetakeaway.org in six words or less. What do you want to say about the summer that just about was? We got one more day.